Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Oh, welcome back to Faking Movies.
Oh my god.
That was going to happen to me.
Oh, really?
That was my dear friend.
On that one.
Yeah, that was my dear friend Seth. He just... Oh,
hey.
He's eating a fucking cucumber, not a pickle. Yeah. A cucumber.
He tried to bite it again.
Yep.
It didn't quite work as well.
Still got the whole mouthful. That's our Foley budget for the year. We're done. We gotta call it off.
I mean, we could take that.
I broke an arm.
Yeah, I was saying we could take that clip and sell it to Hollywood. You eating an apple? Here's Seth chomping on a cucumber. You breaking an arm? Here's Seth chomping on a cucumber. This is how Faking Movies is going to monetize. Finally.
Yeah, we did it. Oh my god. Well done.
Also with me this week, of course, is Zach. Hey, what's up, Zach?
Oh, not much, buddy. Not much.
I got seeds all over my stuff.
Well,
I'm no producer, but I think we can sell that one too. That seems like gold.
I hope that in addition to cucumber seeds, here in episode 49, you also have the seeds of a wonderful movie, because Seth, you're faking it this week. Yeah,
Look at you go.
My mouth is so full of cucumber.
All right. Well, in that case,
Sam.
You guys should all go check out our website, check out our Instagram feed, check out our Twitter especially. We are gaining followers by the day. Thank you very much to all the support we're getting lately. We've been getting a lot more downloads lately. It might just be Russian bots, but if not, thank you all our new listeners. This is awesome.
Yeah. Join us.
Of course,
definitely get on the things and like talk to us and stuff. Give us ideas for movies or
We all have like, the engage. Passwords. Yeah, we have all the passwords to our social media accounts. We will engage because all of us are bored all the time.
More than you'd want, even. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
I don't know how to slide into someone's DMs, so just expect me to do it in public. No, that's not funny. I'm not going to sexually harass anyone on Twitter. But so,
yeah,
or in real life, hopefully.
I mean, yeah, I yes, correct. Also that.
Good.
You know, of course, if you've been with us for a while, or even if you're just joining us, this show is all about cinematic blind spots. And this week, Seth's got a pretty interesting cinematic blind spot because this week we told him, "Hey, Seth, you're doing Crash," and Seth said. The racist one? And we said no. The non-racist one.
Yeah, so this is apparently not the Academy Award winning one about racism, among other... mostly about racism.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It would have been fun. We should have kept that a secret and tried to do that one, too. But I don't know. Maybe not.
You know, I don't really want to watch that movie ever.
I have seen that movie. So... And it has, like, a lot of people in it. It's another ensemble movie, so...
It's
like,
a big ensemble,
I'd be lying if a little part of me didn't wish that you were going to Dino DNA this and just read the script to Racism Crash tonight and be like, well, that's it. That's my movie. I did it.
Call your family. We're going long on this one because we're going to delve into systemic racism in the U.S. Strap in, boy.
From every perspective, yeah.
I mean, sometimes
we shouldn't do it from every perspective. I don't care what the white people think about it. It's not,
Sandy Bullock's opinion on it does not matter.
No, we are the problem. We are clearly the fucking problem.
A little bit.
A little more doxing. We're all white guys. In case you didn't figure it out yet.
Yeah. Oh, in case that wasn't painfully obvious. Jesus.
Seth, tell us about Not Racist Crash.
Well, sometimes after systemic racism lands on the branch of a tree.
No, we can't. Not again.
Go on.
I'm not going to do it this time. So this time, what you fellas gave me was Crash, parentheses, not the racist one, and close parentheses. Starring James Spader, Holly Hunter, and I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but so Elias
Cotis.
Yeah, okay, it's Cotis.
I believe
Elias Cotis, who I can only think of as Casey Jones from
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
the first one.
The
third one.
I don't remember that one as well because I haven't watched it as many times. But
naturally, because the first one's good and the third one's bad. Yeah,
it was in the Wild West.
Are you saying Turtle?
No, it was in Feudal Japan.
Feudal Japan, Turtles in Time. Are you talking about Back to the Future Part 3, my favorite one?
We'll get to that later.
Yeah, you're wrong, but go ahead. It's clearly 2 is the best one, but you know. Yeah,
obviously.
Oh my God, 2 is not the best one.
We can
argue about this at a later date. maybe a mini ep where we just argue about which Back to the Future is supposed to
be. A lot of screaming.
That is a feature length ep, if not longer.
True facts. Anyway, so I had James Spader, Holly Hunter, Elias Cotes.
Why not?
Well, I'm going to refer to him a lot in my notes here as just Casey Jones. And then we have
no one will be confused by that. If anything, it'll be clearer.
And then we have Rosanna Arquette. Of the famed Arquette clan.
Also, the song by Toto, Rosanna, is named for her.
Really?
It's about Rosanna Arquette?
It's not about her. So one of the members of Toto was dating her and they broke up, and around the same time they were writing a song and they needed a female name to fit into it, and they realized, hey, we can name it after your girlfriend. He's like, we broke up, and they're like, yeah, but it fits perfect. So
it's the right number of syllables.
It fits with that really great drum shuffle.
True.
I mean, that's a good song. That's fucking torture, though. Oh, you don't want to talk about it? Cool, let's sing about it for the next 20 years.
And by 20 years, you mean like 50. That song is more or less immortal. And by immortal, I mean 50 years.
Also, Patrick Swayze and the woman who played Penny in Dirty Dancing are both in that music video.
Whoa. Wow.
Huh.
Okay.
Weird.
Bringing the heat.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay.
Toto. Look him up.
Well, okay.
Well, that was weird. All right.
All right.
Let that dead air wash over you.
Always. Always.
All right, fellas. So I'll preface this one. This one is complicated, and I didn't think it out super well. But I have a vision.
Oh, these worlds are so clear in your head.
We wouldn't have it any other way. This is the only way. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's weird. So after I finish the whole plot, I might need to clarify some things.
Okay.
But
can't wait.
We'll see. Casey Jones is a man. I mean, he looks like he is living in a total shithole apartment, right? Like, in some, like, nondescript city. Though, wait, fellas. What about...
Oh, God.
How
many turtles are we about to add to this movie?
What if we pandered more for this movie? So it's in like my setting was like a nondescript city, but what if we like released different versions of this movie for different geographical demos. Like we have
like the Brock Lesnar Suplex City shirts that they print for every city they go to. Oh,
okay, I don't know what you're talking about anymore, but
Bork.
Yeah.
I don't they do this for the Asian market in some movies where they like pump up the stuff like the action scenes and the stuff that they know like China really digs.
Well, in Iron Man 3, they filmed a whole bunch of extra shit for the Chinese market.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
And I think Fast and Furious did this to a some degree, maybe. I might be lying. I don't know.
Huh. Well, I mean, with their drifting and whatnot, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mean that entire movie for them?
Honestly, kind of. Yes. Yeah.
Sure. But okay. No. But I was thinking like we could have like an LA version and a New York version and like a shitty Midwest version like where I'm from and a shitty college town version like where I live currently and you know
whatever. Let's why not? Let's go for it.
Okay.
Sounds expensive as fuck, but yeah, why not?
Well, if we shoot it all on a green screen.
Yeah, and you just need a couple establishing shots, which you can get from, you know, shitty college
promo video things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, it's no problem.
Okay, I'm on board. Yep.
Anyway, it's not terribly important. Let's get back to my notes. Casey Jones is in a shithole apartment. Uh-huh. And we start to hear Rosanna Arquette's like voice, and you know it has that kind of like throaty lounge singer sort of thing going on, but it's all off screen. Like we don't actually see her; we just hear her voice. It's just kind of some general establishing.
Of the evening and I'll hold you tight.
No, stop.
No, that sets things. Knock it off.
What are you doing? And they talk about, you know, just kind of general things, and there's like basically we're establishing characters and things like that, and they're not really talking about anything important. But we see more of Casey Jones's life. You know, he like goes to work and is out and about. His apartment is totally shitty, his clothes are totally shitty, and he isn't doing super well. Like we know this because, you know, he's just schlubby, I guess, maybe.
Okay.
But it turns out that he is a scientist, because I have to.
Yep.
It's been a while, though.
It's been a little bit. Yeah, it's been a minute. But he studies corvids and other, like, large birds.
Can I get a definition on the word corvid real quick?
Corvids are like ravens and crows and
smartest of the birds.
Sure. Which interestingly, like, are one of the few animals other than humans that plays for like that actually plays like it does stuff for no particular purpose, which is really really fascinating.
I've seen the research on crows where they're also teaching them like to pick up cigarette butts in exchange for treats and stuff. Like
it's amazing. They are very, very, very like they are ostensibly the smartest of the birds because they don't like actually have to do anything. Like they're very adaptable and they're anyway. He studies
House at Crow Corner.
Mm-hmm. We can We can
count all the bees in the hive. That's a Loggins and Messina attempt at a joke right there.
Oh, we're back. Yeah.
Yeah.
No pass. anyway, we see Casey Jones going about his life, you know, in general, like he's going to stores and like it's really just kind of like slice of life thing for this kind of shitty, schlubby looking dude. And he buys supplies, he buys, like, bird seed and food and toiletries, whatever.
Okay.
This to me so far, like, this seems like Paul Giamatti's actual life to me for some reason.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not, too far off the mark. Then we have Holly Hunter as like some kind of regulatory agent. Like, I don't really care what kind, but like she's there to check up on this scientist. And James Spader is her like sniveling assistant. Like, he's clearly like a real, real shitty dude. Yeah,
that's a good Spader role.
Exactly. And they review Casey Jones's work and deem it to be somehow subpar. Like, he isn't, I don't know, publishing enough? I don't know. Like, he isn't like doing what they want him to do to the degree that they want him to do it, as is sure. Very common.
He's kicking the crows. Yeah.
No.
No.
He's definitely not kicking the crows. Anyway, we go back to Casey's house and we hear Patricia Arquette again, like, reassuring him and like telling him that it'll be all right. And Holly and James come over to the door and they like knock, and of course, like, Casey won't let them in. And at the same time, we look back into Casey's room, and it's like almost cartoonishly idealized. Like, this like Cotis view of the world is like super nice. Like, his apartment is not like chic, but it is very, very comfortable. And we see Patricia Arquette, like the actual person there, like trying to urge him to get them to go away, and he's like shushing her the entire time. But he's like, quiet. And we shift back to the darkened hallway where, you know, Holly Hunter and James Spader are like demanding. They're like, oh, hey, I hear you, like, open up. And Cotes is like, no, he's just like, shh, Patricia, be quiet. Like, and eventually they leave or whatever.
Okay.
And inside the room, like, we go back into his shitty apartment, and it's like darker tones, and we don't see her, but we only hear Patricia Arquette again, and like they're talking about stuff. But there's like definitely an intense shift in cinematic styles that keep happening between all of these interactions. Like, it's either very, very like bright and fun and interesting, or it's dark and dull and kind of upsetting.
Okay.
So we have several more interactions where Goteus like is clearly viewing the world in a different way from an outsider perspective, and it's constantly shifting between these two, and so like without jumping too far, like, eventually it's revealed that Patricia Arquette is a crow. And Cotes believes that he hears her. Like, I mean, he's got like maybe some level of schizophrenia or whatever. It's not terribly important, but he believes that Patricia Arquette is this crow that is talking to him. And so, like, at some point in the plot, he ends up being institutionalized, and things in the institution are shitty and dark. And then a crow comes to his window and, like, brings him the tools necessary to escape. And there's, like, chase scenes, and we jump back and forth between perspectives as we're moving along. And it's all super jarring. Like, in the way that I envisioned this as I was writing it less than an hour ago, was that it was super, like, it is definitely not comfortable when they shift, but it's very, very marked.
Much like you would imagine schizophrenia being, I would
think. Yeah. As far as I'm given to understand, though, I certainly can't say to that degree.
Sure.
And the end scene, Cotes is at, like, some sort of precipice, and he's surrounded, and, like, you have... there's a crow nearby which keeps talking to him from his perspective, but we shift perspectives and it's just like caw caw at everybody else, and which he keeps having to shush, of course. And the final scene, he falls backwards off of the precipice and everything shifts into like a happier like color scheme, as we had discussed, like his more like idealized version as he falls down, and we fade to black. And then there's a voiceover, and it's just like, craw, craw! And he's just like, shh.
Oh.
And that's Crash. Crash!
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Seth, I'm going to be honest here. I was mm-hmm. waiting the whole time for the chance to say "That's So Raven." So I'm going to dock you some points at the end because I didn't get to. But
what's wait, you're docking him because you didn't interrupt with it?
It didn't feel organic, Zach. God.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah,
that's
but
fair.
I really wanted this to be sort of like a like fantasy world a la The Cell, which we've all watched, or like
yeah.
Like a Don Quixote sort of like situation where there's like a person who is disconnected from reality and had to like deal with it. I mean, yeah. This is not as much of a joke movie as I usually do, other than the sure. hilarious title.
Well, I mean, yeah. I believe like earlier this week we did discuss it's very hard to split up the word crash, five letters, yeah. one syllable, into different words.
Yeah, yeah. I had to think about it a lot.
So I was thinking like Fight Club. This like not a yeah. good example, mm-hmm. but like a movie where this happens, which like can be very effective. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. I wanted it mostly to be these very different cinematographic styles. And
it's
like
there's different points in like Being John Malkovich where there's very
yeah.
distinct
yeah.
cinematography. Yeah.
I wanted this to be like questioning the viewer, like how they interpret either the, you know, dim, grim supposed real world versus this dude's version of it and things like
yeah.
that.
Sure.
That's what I wanted. Like, it's not...
No, it's a very... It's not a movie that necessarily has a distinct, like, plot. The plot's more there to serve as, like, a way yeah. to explore the tone, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Seems fun.
Yeah, I mean it's fun, but it's not really that fun because you have to like.
it super sounds like the kind of movie that I would hear about and read about and see the trailer and get very excited for. But then at the end of the day, when mm-hmm. I'm going flipping through my Netflix,
yeah, I'm not gonna watch it.
Maybe I put the bench warmers on instead. I don't know. Like,
oh, Drillbit Taylor sounds pretty good.
Oh no, that movie's a yeah. bummer.
This movie is also probably a bummer.
Yeah, but in a different way.
Yeah. very different. Oh, wow. What a bummer.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Let's go back in time and say Saving Silverman, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, I love that movie.
I mean, I'll always watch yeah. Saving Silverman. Shit.
Yeah. No, yeah. It is one of those movies that it sounds like it'd be kind of a chore. Like, I have many of those in my queue right now where I'm like, oh, I kind of know what it's about. And I just.
Yeah.
I'm never going to be in the mood for this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think that it could potentially be like a very good movie, but it is not yeah. an enjoyable movie.
Sure. Right, yeah. And then when you watch it, you go like, oh, that's like, I see what they did there.
Like,
that's pretty good.
Yeah. But
you watch and you're like, I can really appreciate what right. they accomplished in this movie, but yeah. I don't know that I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yes. It's not my traditional goof 'em ups or, you know, weird wordplay bullshit.
Well, goddamn, Seth, I need to break in here. A movie that you can really appreciate what they accomplished, but maybe you didn't enjoy.
Oh.
You kind of nailed Crash.
yeah. Oh, shit.
If you're going on tone alone, I think 10 out of 10. Yeah, fucking perfect. Perfect match. Yes, agreed.
Oh, that's kind of fun. Yeah. But yep. So what was the real version of Crash?
So before we give you the short summary on IMDb,
Crash!
And this is actually a longer short summary than we
it
usually
is.
See.
Crash!
Yeah, it is.
Right. Oh, would you have changed your approach any if we had told you who the director was?
Oh yeah.
The director of this movie was David Cronenberg.
Oh,
More crows would have pecked out more eyes, probably.
Yeah, there would have been a lot more body horror.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
Yeah,
more talk about the flesh.
That the actual crash would have been very close up, probably.
Yeah.
Although I feel like this, the movie you made, I could see that being a Cronenberg style movie.
It could do.
Yeah,
would do.
Yep. So yeah. Zach, do you want to read the short synopsis?
Sure. I want to read it, but I also want to watch Seth's face as I read it. It's going to be hard to do both at the same time.
Oh, well, I can read it if you like.
Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs.
No, I'll tough through it. Okay. After getting into a serious car accident, a TV director discovers an underground subculture of scarred, omnisexual car crash victims who use car accidents and the raw sexual energy they produce to try to rejuvenate his sex life with his wife. Okay, that face is exactly what I was hoping for. Yes!
What the shit? Yeah.
I want to start off here today, guys, by saying this movie, I've seen it before, and I was weirded out. You know, I was like, I don't know if I like this movie. I loved it. But this movie is available on YouTube.
Oh,
like, yeah. It is,
sure enough.
And it's. I feel like we're not in danger of blowing up anyone's spot because it has been on YouTube in full for 4 years.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
And as I recall, you said like a surprisingly good copy, like entirely reasonable, right?
Yeah, it looked totally fine to me. Yeah.
I guess, do you want to talk about, before we get going, the sort of controversy that surrounded this?
Yeah, this movie, it ended up getting rated NC-17 because there is some fairly graphic stuff in it. You know, it's a Canadian production, so in case anyone's ever telling you how great Canada is, they subsidize filth, apparently, because, you know, Canadian government paid for part of this movie. but it's like there was a big uproar with certain critics in some countries about like this is just pornography, it's degrading to people with disabilities, this and that. They tried to ban it in England. The studio like independently hired all these like psychiatrists and like advocate groups for people with disabilities, and they were like, watch this movie, do you think that it's offensive to the groups you represent? And everybody was like, no, it's totally fine.
That's, I was gonna say, if anything, it's very empowering to people with disabilities. Like,
it
not only is like you can have like a sex life and also a normal life, but it's also like you can celebrate your thing if you feel like that's the thing that you're into. Like,
But it is still technically in certain parts of London, specifically the Westminster area, you cannot sell or exhibit this film. Still.
Yeah. Pretty weird.
I don't understand quite how that works, but
I mean, I don't know
in a how pragmatic
the fucking
sense,
privy courts
not.
Work in goddamn England, but you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand common law.
Right.
Well,
because it's nonsense.
It also isn't common law, it's civil law, but whatever.
That one.
Mm-hmm. I guess in service to that, my first note is straight out the gate, eating out butts, plural unrelated distinct butts. A lot of ass eating in the first 10 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, the first shot of this movie is a woman putting her nipple on an airplane.
With no context.
Just on an airplane.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a small, like single engine kind of plane.
Oh,
you know?
Like a Sopwith Camel or something.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Cessna something. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Cessna. Ugh. Those dirty sluts, Cessnas.
Yeah,
yeah, kind of. Apparently.
I feel like I need to give you more info about this movie.
Yeah, probably.
Really.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I would say so. Maybe.
All right. So James right Spader. Now. James Spader and his wife are like in an open marriage, but it's clear that both of them are very bored with their sex life.
Sure.
So we just see them having these like interactions with other people, and it's not really doing anything for them. Spader gets into a car accident, and the other car is being driven. Holly Hunter plays a doctor, mm-hmm. and she's the passenger, and her husband dies during the crash. Like, he's not even a character. Like, he gets thrown from the car and crashes into Spader's car. Mm-hmm. So they briefly meet each other, Holly Hunter and Spader, at the hospital. And eventually they run into each other again at, like, the impound lot. And this is when Spader gets brought into this bigger world, so to speak.
Hunter already a participant? Or
okay, that yes. that was my that was the immediate question I had. Yeah, so she had nothing to do with this accident. It was all Spader's fault. But, like, mm-hmm. she just happens to already be into this extreme niche fetish and is like, yes. like, this is the best day of her life, even though her husband died somehow. Like, how right. fucking weird is that? Mm-hmm.
So they end up, like, getting into a sexual relationship, and it's always in cars because she needs to be in a car.
Sure.
She introduces him to Rosanna Arquette, who is in, like, a very intense, like, body brace, but is still able to, like, move around and walk, and she has some pretty intense scarification on the back of her legs from mm-hmm. an operation she had, and that mm-hmm. comes into play later.
Boy does it.
But, boy does yeah. it. But also okay. Holly Hunter introduces Spader to Elias Koteas, mm-hmm. who is kind of like the avant-garde artist ringleader of this whole group, and he stages famous car crashes as an art piece. And he nice. Does it because he's yeah,
he's
he does
the Jim
it
Jones a, of this group. Like he's a cult leader. yeah.
Does he sometimes
and he does
wear
it
because
he's obsessed with he does not.
He does not, unfortunately.
He does not, unfortunately. And he doesn't have a Jose Canseco bat either.
I'm not interested as much anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I know.
Anyway,
he and some surprised. Stunt drivers that he knows stage these crashes, and he like also takes... He drives around to find crash sites and take pictures because he's working on an art project about how... he says that the car crash is like a life-affirming thing because of all the energy it gives off as opposed to a deadly, dangerous thing.
Yeah.
Eventually, as the movie okay. goes on, there's like a darker side to him that they hint at that we
yeah,
kind
of
get, that
a
we see a little bit of.
Of course there's a darker side to him. yeah. God damn. Exactly. Like, a dude that is really, really into car crashes.
Yeah.
Well, let's think about this.
He eventually dies in a car crash.
Of course.
Yeah. The movie ends with James Spader and his wife getting Elias Koteas' car out of the impound after he's dead. And Spader runs his wife off the road in that car while she's driving her car. And, like, the last shot is them lying in the median and they're both fine. And he's like, oh, maybe next time. Because they were trying to kill each other.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, lying in the median, she's, like, presumed fine. I don't know. She doesn't move at all. And then, so he just, like, snuggles up next to her and, like, fucks her as they're just in the median after
yeah.
this. Both of the, well, the one car flipped over. The one, he just stopped in the middle of a three-lane highway. And they just
yeah, but it was Toronto. So, like, how busy is Toronto, really? Like,
I mean, I guess.
It's a big goddamn city. So.
Yeah, but yeah, that's the end. That's the weird end. Yeah,
yeah. That's a very brief version of this movie. But
I think yeah, the long arc is like Spader is immediately into it because he experienced it, and then his wife is bored, and like so he brings her along into this, mm-hmm. and Elias is like slowly dragging them past their comfortability point.
Sure,
like at every
like
turn,
pressing them a little. Like more and more, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. Like but yeah. they're like into
like
it,
like a cult
yeah.
leader would do,
right? Exactly. Yeah,
yeah absolutely. So, yeah. Zach, do you want to start? Do you have some stuff?
Yeah. Sure. My first thing. Yeah, I guess I kind of touched on this. I wrote, "What are the odds that Spader and the other victim's wife end up at the abandoned car impound under the highway overpass at the exact same time to look at their impounded crashed cars?" This is the first time they meet, as Lee said. They're both just under a highway, like, oh, crash cars, weird. And then they fuck, and then, like, I guess that's their introduction, and she brings him into this world. But, like, same with, like, she's already into this and has a car crash that day.
Yeah,
like, there's so many, like, completely implausible coincidences in this movie. Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, given the director, there's like a lot more gore than.
No, not really any gore.
Not tons. I mean, there's some NC-17. There's some
kind of modification stuff and some real raunch sex, but
body modification or.
Yeah. Well, like Spader has this horrible leg brace for a while after the crash, and there's just pins all over it, and it's really like gruesome to look at.
He has an external stabilizer, and he's walking around, and then he also gets back into a car and drives a car, apparently still with the external stabilizer on. Which I was like, there's no fucking way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah, and I bet there's like amputee sort of things going on, and
kind of like I think that's Roseanne Arquette is probably the closest we get to that.
Yeah, there's no actual amputees, but yeah, there's a lot of actual, like, there's some definite, like, disability stuff, yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
My next thing, Lee and I talked about this, the shots in this movie are phenomenal. Like, Cronenberg is fucking on point in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the overt sexuality, there's so much, like, actual graphic sex in this movie. And it's still like somewhat tasteful, and then the subtle sexuality is very good.
It's the thing that I find very interesting about this movie, and I think this goes into like the whole underlying themes of it. All of the sex is shot very graphically, but none of it is sexy. It's all very clinical. Yeah.
There's the dialogue, especially, is very clinical. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it makes perfect sense. It's this movie about this couple who, like, are very open and adventurous sexually, who don't even, like, they have no excitement from it anymore. So even as Spader especially gets dragged into this, like, strange fetish world, even then, like, when he's having very straightforward sex scenes, it's not interesting, it's not sexy, even though it's very graphic, but when they're like showing car crashes, it's very dangerous and it's very sensual. Yeah. And it's like,
that's a very interesting juxtaposition then.
And I will say, like, no one emotes very much in this movie. Like, all the facial expressions are completely blank the whole time. Like,
I think that's very much
on purpose. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some very subtle good scenes. So like when Spader gets back in the car for the first time, he's driving with Holly Hunter and he's like tugging on his seatbelt because I guess he's both sort of fearful because it's his first time back in a car. And then also he's like finding this new excitement with the thing. And there's like three or four times where he tugs on the seatbelt and it goes from fear to like definite enthusiasm and
like
sort
arousal,
curiosity.
Sort of thing.
And it was like, it was not entirely subtle, but it was like very, very well done. Like they didn't have to point it out. It was just right there. Like it was really good.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think one of the things I find very interesting about this movie, having watched it again, is it is essentially like very alienating. It seems like it should be like, if not experimental, it's not a very like typical kind of movie. Like it's not straightforward in any way.
See, I wanted my movie to be vaguely alienating not straightforward. So
I mentioned this at right before we started talking about the real movie, like with your, especially in relation to your movie. The thing about it is though, it follows such a very like classic structure that it actually it draws you in and it makes you feel very like comfortable with the movie, even when you're very alienated from what's happening in the movie. So like it's 90 minutes long. The first act ends at like minute 28. The second act ends at like minute 61. Like
so it's like very formulaic in that regard.
Yes, exactly, but the structure is very formulaic, but the movie itself is anything but.
Huh.
I was gonna say, and it actually feels very natural. So Lee pointed this out before I watched it, and I would not have noticed otherwise. Like it's very pleasing. Like I think it makes the off-putting subject matter and the off-putting sort of shots and whatever sort of much more acceptable because it feels comfortable as a progression, if you will.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, like, specifically I'm thinking about when Act Two starts. That's when we meet. We've met him briefly before this, but that's when we really meet Elias Koteas, his character. Yeah.
Sure.
And it's when Holly Hunter brings James Spader to one of his performances.
Yeah.
And scene in, I think, in a movie that came out either in the 70s or in the last decade, like, so like 2008 till now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The performance he gives in this scene would win him an Oscar if this movie came out in either of the, this movie's from 1996, yeah. But if it had come out in the 70s or more recently,
yep.
He is an Oscar winning actor right now.
It's so brooding and calculated. Yeah. I could not agree more.
It is haunting. It's mesmerizing. It's strange, but it's, oh my God, it's very good.
He feels like a Daniel Day-Lewis kind of thing. Like, he got so into it. Like, you believe that he is this guy. Like, it's so good.
He's literally, like, the whole thing. Like, just crawling around with a microphone pressed against his face, like, talking to this crowd about the car crash he's about to be in. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Huh.
He's so into it. It's so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I wrote kind of like not a bummer, but like a kind of weird sort of complicated movie, and then this one sounds like that as well.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Is it just because it's this monosyllabic title? Is that like is it this kind of depressing, like a crash is a bad thing, like a crash inherently is not great.
The connotation is there for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, do you think that's just sort of like a like our like the natural interpretation, at least for North American English speakers, that like a crash is going to produce this kind of like weird sort of feeling that you're not entirely comfortable with, but is also like a part of everyday life thing.
I mean, at the very least, it's jarring, right? Like
it's jarring. Yeah. Like that's the whole thing. It's very, very jarring.
Right.
I mean, for the movie specifically, it's based on a novel, so like there is
As I say, it was a book, right? Yeah,
it's a J.G. Ballard novel, and I don't know how it departs from, or but it's yeah, like I mean, I think you might be onto something there. Like the word "crash" itself does bring up some very specific feelings.
Yeah, some sort of strength in that regard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I think it's like for me, that's like it makes it even more interesting that like it drew me in and made me as comfortable as I was watching it. When it's something that should be at least sparking like panic for me or alarm or alertness.
Yeah,
but I was really just kind of like drawn into it. But the middle of the movie is definitely belongs to Elias Koteas, because it is his story. Yeah. The middle of the movie is his story. Right at that third act mark is when we start to get that hint that, like, he's being interviewed by the cops about a hit and run. And they're like, he wouldn't have done that because he doesn't care about pedestrians. He cares about cars crashing into each other.
Yeah.
And in the next scene, there's blood all over his car and they take it through an all-night car wash. So, like, that's when the turn happens for his character.
They take it through an all-night car wash where James Spader is driving and Elias and James Spader's wife are in the back seat violently having sex to the point where it's like the next scene, she has bruises and is like even more sort of checked out from the entire universe that it like it's very upsetting. Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, so that's when Casey Jones morphs into kind of a, we see what he's capable of.
Yeah, versus,
the dark side turns over, so I have here, to maybe shine a tiny glimmer of light into this, I had texted Lee in the beginning of this movie, James Spader's wife, drives a beautiful NA silver Miata. And I was like, this is the best. I'm a big fan of Miata. I drive a NB silver Miata. I'm hugely into this car. And I was like, oh, I thought they were going to fuck this car up, and they didn't. And I'm so glad. And Lee said, ooh, just maybe don't get too attached to that one. And yeah, not only like kind of smashes in the side, but then that's the one she fucking flips over in later, and they just destroy the whole thing.
Yeah,
of course. Very bad. Of course.
Yeah. But yeah, also flipped over in the Miata, like you'd be so dead. Your best case scenario, you get thrown from it and you maybe live. But like, well, she was underneath it. Like, she's
right.
There's no way.
I mean, the magic of the movies, you know? But
yeah, it's fine. That's fine.
You guys kept mentioning Rosanna Arquette's, like, scarred legs.
Oh, you can take this one, Zach.
Okay. I'm just curious, like, why you had mentioned it before.
Yeah, so everybody fucks everybody in this movie. It's kind of the whole thing.
Sure.
Including Elias Koteas and James Spader.
I have that written down at like minute, I want to say like 75 or something. I was like, finally some Spader on Elias action. It took so long.
I mean, they did say it was
omnisexual. Surprisingly.
Yeah,
it was surprisingly not necessarily surprisingly graphic, but they took it much further than I would expect a movie from the mid 90s to be willing to go with a male on male sex scene.
When did this come out, by the way?
96.
Yeah. So I guess before
like
we
Titanic.
Get to
Titanic.
Yeah. It was a good year.
Day.
It was a good year.
It was essentially Independence Day.
ID4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is Independence Day for these weird fetish people. Yeah.
In Canada.
They, I
don't care. I like that tagline.
before we get to Rosanna, I wrote down the dialogue when Spader and his wife are having sex before Spader and Elias have sex. And Lee said earlier about the clinical nature of all of the dialogue and the sex.
Sure.
The dialogue in this scene is fucking crazy.
Yeah,
she says,
this one especially.
Yeah, she says, can you imagine what his anus looks like? Describe it to me. Spader says nothing. Spader says nothing this entire scene for like 2.5 minutes. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she keeps going on and says the word anus like 16 more times. And then she's like, his penis. Would you suck on his penis? A thing that no one has ever said. That's so weird. Just only says anus and penis over and over and over. And I was like, you guys are already a hard NC-17. Why not cock, dick, whatever?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter.
Why not?
I mean, I think that plays into, like, you know, the sex of it all isn't the part that's supposed to excite you in this movie.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he that was the pinnacle of him looking entirely bored, like you were mentioning earlier, Lee.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, maybe that was part of that trope, I guess? I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, Rosanna Arquette doesn't have a huge part in this movie, but her and Spader go out at one point. I think they steal a car, or they get into like a Mercedes or something.
Well, they're at a dealership, and she has she has her leg braces on, and she's like semi seducing the dealer.
This was despite all the like actual weird sex in this movie, this was the most uncomfortable scene for sure.
Really?
So she's leaning over the car. She has on a very short skirt, and the dealer walks. He struts up. He's like, "You see anything you're interested in?" And she's like, "This car interests me."
She's like literally fucking the car. Like, I don't know why he wasn't just like, "Get out." Like,
yeah,
yeah, sure.
she says, "I want to see if I can fit into a car meant for regular people.
Yeah.
Will you help me?" So he's like, oh, yeah, I'll help you. And, you know, he's running his hands up her leg and everything. And her brace gets caught on the seat and tears the leather. And the dealer kind of, like, freaks out. He's like, oh, shit, this is bad.
Oh, this is very bad, yeah.
Yeah, and then smash cut to her and James Spader in a different car having sex.
They found a different Mercedes in, like, a parking garage structure thing.
They break into it.
Yeah, apparently. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So he's like, there's a lot of heavy petting, and then he like flips her around and he sees this giant scar up the entire back of her thigh. and then either fucks it or like rubs on it or something, and she's like very into it, and it just let like it's all over in like 10 seconds, and they both just are like, yes, this was the obvious thing that was supposed to happen, and that's the end of it. And it was like it truly, I mean, I don't want to yuck any yums, but like it seemed a little it's a little heavy. I don't know. Yeah,
well, I mean, I think this just keeps playing into the actual sex in this movie is not sexy. It's that's the things surrounding. Yeah.
Well, and as we've been saying, like it adds to the, everyone has to keep heightening everything. Everyone is bored with the sex. So they have to keep
right.
It has to keep being accelerated and heightened and everything because no one's ever pleased with where they currently are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's interesting.
I also wanted to bring up, so we mentioned that, Casey Jones, he likes to stage famous car crashes. So specifically it's like car crashes that are celebrities died in. So when we first see him, that scene when he's there is they're reenacting the car crash that killed James Dean. Like with period appropriate cars, like
identical.
His big dream. Yeah, identical, yeah. His big dream is for him and his stunt driver friend to reenact the crash that killed Jane Mansfield, including the dog being in the car. And so there's a scene later in the movie where Spader and his wife are driving with Casey Jones, and there's a car crash, and Casey Jones jumps out of the car to see it and take pictures, and he sees that it was his stunt driver friend, and he reenacted. He's like, God, you couldn't wait for me for the Jane Mansfield crash? Oh! And he's like monologuing as he's taking pictures, and the cops are ignoring this strange man taking pictures of the crash site.
There's like an entire like cordoned off, traffic is fully stopped, and they go up on the grass median to drive past it. And I was like, "What? No, in no world would this happen."
Oh, they're in Canada. The cops are way too polite to stop them.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Huh. All right.
Yeah. I don't know. I found that kind of very fascinating of like, and he talks about like, I like reenacting these crashes. I wish I could do it with an actual crash car. Like, find one of the cars that one of these people died in and fix it up just enough for it to drive. Yeah. So I could drive just it enough. Around. Yeah.
Well, and the car that they drive around in the whole time was, I think, supposedly the
JFK limo.
JFK was killed in. Yeah. Which I was like, would we call that a crash? They didn't crash.
They have a discussion about that in the car. He goes,
oh, do they? Oh, okay.
Yeah, they have a discussion about that during one scene. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah,
he considers it a crash car because of the explosion of life that happens in that car.
Ah, certainly. Certainly.
Interesting.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Zach wanted to talk a little bit about some more background.
Seamless.
Yeah, of course. Always.
We call it out every time.
Yeah.
Every goddamn time.
Just call me the tailor, because podcasts. So, seamless. But I did want to mention this movie. I think a lot of the critics at the time echoed kind of the way me and Zach felt about it. Like, it got fairly good reviews. Like, it won the third prize at Cannes that year.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty good.
Most of the reviews, of the reviews, including Siskel and Ebert, were both along the lines of, I know that this movie is excellent. I also know that I didn't enjoy watching it. Like,
like we had said, that's much like we critiqued your movie, Seth. It's like, I get it, but it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know. I think that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
It's useful sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and it did win a bunch of awards at the Canadian, they used to be called Genie Awards, but the Canadian Top Film Awards. It didn't win Best Picture, but it did win Best Director, Best Screenplay, a bunch of stuff. So,
sure. Yeah. So I guess before we rate, I did a little bit of a deep dive, kind of a shallow dive, as it turns out, on this actual fetish. I guess it's called symphorophilia, which doesn't cover just car crash fetish. It's more like any sort of very violent, perverse fetish where, like, it also includes sort of, if you imagine someone killing you is very sexy to you, or like sort of any, or like you're in like a hostage situation or something like that.
It's like, but extreme heightened danger of a loved one.
Does it count if I imagine that I'm in Die Hard all the time and that I'm the hero?
Oh, man.
I mean, I personally would want to come up for a new very cool name for that that somehow incorporates your name into it, but we can workshop it. We can workshop it.
Sure, sure.
So it's considered, I think it's in the psychology books, it's considered a sexual perversion, technically. Mm. But this is like 90s, early 2000s. I think in modern times, in the don't yuck any yums kind of culture, which I think we all fully support.
Sure.
It's considered more of a like, do whatever you feel like as long as you're not hurting anyone. I guess the clinical thing is in which staging and watching a tragedy such as a fire or traffic accident provides arousal.
Mm-hmm.
And so this specifically for the term I described has to do with accidental situations rather than purposeful ones. There was a distinction between like you want to kill people and that gets you off as opposed to like a car crash happens or you're in a fire or you happen to die or something.
Right. I think that seems like a natural distinction.
Yeah. I can understand why you would draw that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Very different. So as it turns out, there's actually very little empirical study or evidence for this at all. I don't think it's actually much of a real thing, or if it is, no one has really come across it.
Well, it's a thing that exists. It's just not like a big widespread culture. Sure.
I mean, sexuality has been studied increasingly more, but it seems like no one can really find people that will come forth with this thing.
Sure.
I guess less severe versions include like ambulance chasing or collecting or viewing pictures of car crashes, which also feature in this movie quite heavily.
Mm-hmm.
Proxies for the real thing. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
There's somewhat related fetishes, somewhat less related fetishes that have to do with object sexuality in terms of like sexualizing cars in general or machinery in general.
I've heard a lot more about that.
That's been much more publicized recently.
For instance, I read an explanation from a Dr. May said that he's in love with his car.
Mm-hmm.
Are we doing a goof here?
Okay. That was too obscure. So Brian May from Queen does have a PhD, so he is a doctor and there's a Queen song called.
Sorry, guys.
That was pretty obscure, bro.
There's a lady
he didn't even
recently
write that song,
that...
so
Oh, goofs for no one that are even more for no one than usual.
Yeah, not even for you guys this time. There was a lady, you said?
Yeah, there was a lady recently that I guess was like a carnival ride technician. Found this Ferris wheel that she like kind of fell in love with, and then like it left town. And then like 20 years later, she found that exact same Ferris wheel and then married it. And this is like very famous on the internet now.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
And then there's the famous guy that everybody makes fun of that he was in love with his red Pontiac Grand Prix, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty big one. But again, this is that's very much more generic than the very specific thing that this movie is about. So,
yeah, that guy is like the least shallow dude ever. If he fell in love with a Grand Prix, it wasn't for the looks.
Tell me about it. Yeah. I think he honestly said like, "There's just something about it. I can't explain it." I was like, "Yeah, you're not kidding, buddy. You're not kidding."
like Lincoln's face. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is the Lincoln's face of cars.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was
our union together. Wider is better, you guys.
I was a bit disappointed that it wasn't more of a real thing. I figured in today's world and the internet, like there'd be somebody out there that is into this, but I couldn't find anything. So
sure.
Who knows? Yeah. So should we rate? Lee, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Seth, did you have any, like, questions or thoughts that you wanted
to know? No, I mean, like, my thoughts are generally, like, I know this particular app is not as much about goof-em-ups
as it seems,
and like, and that's like very interesting to me why both the actual movie and my version of it were so
well. We were all talking about we all had
yeah, like bleakly artistic. Yeah. I guess.
Well, you said the word crash, and we were all talking about we've all had fucking kind of weird weeks this week. So
yeah, like, I was going to say that. Like,
the
maybe,
planets aligned, and yeah.
maybe it's something about our respective weeks this week and how we feel about them. But let's get some
some good rates in here.
Yeah, let's get some goofs in there about.
Yep.
And also the original version.
Oh boy.
So IMDb, this movie has a 6.4.
Okay.
Which you know, kind of makes sense.
It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think I'll do the OG first. I was not looking forward to rewatching this movie, and I was wrong. Oh my god.
Really?
Into this, like, I was hooked. is watching it on fucking YouTube at 8 a.m. like with, you know, like, yeah,
before that work, is bleak, like, that is very bleak.
Yeah, I was drawn in, and I was alienated, and I just, like, it was a fucking experience. And I think I gotta give this movie like an 8.5. I think it's,
wow.
It's, I think it accomplishes.
Wowzers. Okay.
I think what it's trying to do is not something that I would suggest a filmmaker ever try to do.
Sure.
No. You could go so wrong.
God, it worked for me. It worked so well. I thought this movie was great.
Sure.
I did tell you I'm going to have to dock you because I couldn't fit that so rated.
Oh, no. But,
that's fair.
I had so many Corvids and crash!
I know. But I can really appreciate your artistic project. And I do, you know, I love me a crow.
Sure. Corvids are the best.
I felt like there was a little more that needed some fleshing out that maybe we didn't quite get to.
Oh, sure, yeah. Fleshing. Yeah. Not fleshing. Fleshing. As is.
Well, you know, we gotta alienate everybody.
Yep.
So
jokes as just for us.
instead of the 8 that I was gonna give you, I'll give you a 7.7. You're gonna get docked 0.3 for That's So Raven.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Raven okay. Simone is really important in the zeitgeist. So,
yep, famously.
Oddly enough, she ended up being like the really racist one on The View. Who would have thought? But
that is surprising.
I did not know she was on The View. And it
wait,
definitely...
Raven? Besides all the like old white ladies?
Yeah, it
besides
was.
Yeah. Fucking.
Okay, so let me walk back.
Barbara Walters?
Yeah,
exactly.
A 170-year-old white woman?
let me walk back a little bit. Racist, like, is probably not like a fair term for it. She is far more like the stances she takes on things are like, really, Raven, you dislike that person. That's strange. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Might we say sort of like young and maybe naive? It sounds.
I was
like
thinking
kind of
more
thing.
Like confusingly conservative.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Oh God, that's or, so Raven.
You damn did it! You're back up to an 8, you son of a bitch.
Oh, this one will be fun to enter into the spreadsheet. So.
Yeah, I'm doing it as we speak. I don't even know.
Yeah, it's an 8. Count all
right. All right. Yeah. All right. I think I'll echo Lee on the original movie. I I had watched this pretty recently because I didn't find out about it until I think a couple years ago. And then obviously from the description, I was like, well, I fucking have to watch this movie.
Yeah, but I feel like I've heard of it to a degree. I just didn't ever connect anything to anything else.
But as described, like in the queue, like a bottom of the waterfall, it got kicked up and around every time because I was like, no, I don't want to watch it this week. No, I don't want to watch it this week.
Sure, I have...
I just couldn't do it.
I have a big old pile of movies down there at the bottom of the waterfall just being tumbled about.
Forever and ever. But yeah, then I finally watched it, and I remember sort of, again, liking it less than I did this time. I agree with Lee. I think the cinematography was amazing. The structure was so good. It had its downturns. I think I will also go like maybe like an 8.2 maybe. Like surprisingly good.
Strong.
Since, that's interesting.
Yeah. Since I feel like it definitely wasn't your strongest work.
Like I said, we had an off week, but
We did, and I've come to expect so much goofs and silliness from you, and
I don't know, I've just been like down this week and more introspective than usual, and like that. That's definitely reflected in my work. So I have to edit a goddamn book that I have to get like. I have to edit a book in the next, like, 3 or 4 days before the publisher is all up on my ass, so,
wow. You know what'll lift your spirits a little bit, Seth?
What's that?
Do what I'm doing right now.
Wear an awesome tank top covered in parrots?
Well, that, but,
It's still cold as shit where I live, but, you know, whatever.
You should do a Google image search for Gene Kelly. I'm gonna tell you what, that man's face is so interesting to look at.
Oh my god, wow. This is all post-podcast conversation. What are we even doing?
Yeah, definitely finish whatever you're saying.
Yeah, Zach, it doesn't even matter.
He's so fun looking.
Yeah.
He's just like,
god damn you guys.
He just seems like super chill. Like even when he's older. Oh man.
Oh man. Yeah, like look at that jaw. I mean,
man, you could fucking cut glass on that.
That man, he is a pile of muscles. And like but the kind of muscles that you would use ropes to draw. I don't know. Like
listener. Dear listener, anytime you're down and you are like all right with interacting with humans, look up the Google image search of Gene Kelly, because man, he is like, he'll cheer you up. Anyway, Zach, finish your whatever bullshit you're talking about.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Don't you dare cut any of that out.
We'll try. Yeah, Seth, I think I'm going to give you a 6.5 this week.
Yeah.
I think
it was not terrible. Best work, and I understand that.
But no, like when we started bringing the John Malkovich and like other sort of similar movies parallels, Then I was like, okay, I do definitely see what he's going for, and I probably would definitely watch this.
So, like, parts of it I definitely somehow was channeling, and I realized this halfway through, the movie Willard. There's both the...
Oh, with the rats!
There's both the 1971 version and the 2003 version with Crispin Glover.
Glover, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, I feel like...
That's a man with a face.
Oh, yeah, true
for radio.
True facts. But that's like, as I was describing what I wrote down to you fellas, like that's what I was like, oh, suddenly did I just rewrite like Willard except with corvids instead of rats?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they're
to
both...
be fair, that movie was fine. That was like entirely reasonable. Like it was,
yeah, but they're like slightly misrepresented animals that like people have an irrational fear of that are actually for the most part chill. But They're both just Karen eaters, and people don't like that, which is fine. But sure. that was showing up halfway through. So I gladly accept your middling rating.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, so next week.
this episode got real loose at the end. I don't know.
I keep trying to keep these fucking things under like an hour five. I just
bad this time.
We were doing so good. Yeah, we were doing so good.
We're doing okay now. We'll see.
Next time.
Next week.
50 big fabulous.
50 yeah. fabulous. We're doing it.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, queen. We're reaching all the way back to episode 8. Friend of the show. The thus far most duped guest.
That was fun. Jeremy. That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're going to do sort of a roulette thing, and it's going to be some good shenanigans, and
I mean,
very excited about it.
It's roulette. We're doing a roulette episode again for the first time in a while.
Yeah. So we were going to do those every 10, and it was too much, and so we stopped. But now we figured for 50, we're going to roulette again.
It's going to be complicated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very complicated. And
so, I guess crash.
There crash. Crash.
Oh, I'm gonna have to isolate that.
Yep, crunch. More cucumbers.